Picture this. It's Thursday, 11:47 p.m. You're the on-call engineer at a Series C fintech company.
Oh, the classic late night nightmare scenario.
Right. So you get a billing alert, and it's just a standard automated email, you know, not even a high priority pager alarm. But when you open it, your stomach just completely drops.
Because you immediately know something is very wrong.
Exactly. Over the last 4 hours, your system has just burned through the entire month's AI inference budget. I mean, $312,000 gone.
It is, well, it's the absolute definition of a modern engineering disaster. And what makes it so terrifying to anyone who has actually managed these systems is the sheer silent speed of the financial bleed.
Yeah, it's not like a server crashing.
No, exactly. A server outage makes noise. A logic loop in a massive language model just quietly drains the bank account.
So you frantically look at the logs to see what happened, and it's almost absurd. You have this customer onboarding sub-agent, just a small piece of Kainment to help users set up profiles.
Very standard stuff.
Yeah, and it got a malformed JSON response, basically just a formatting error in the data. But the AI didn't crash. It thought that parse error was a request for clarification from the user.
Oh no. So it tried to resolve it.
Yes. So it asked itself how to fix it. Then it asked again. It triggered a massive cascade. At recursion depth 5, meaning the agent spun up subagents, which spun up subagents, you know, 5 layers deep, you suddenly had 243 concurrent agents spinning simultaneously.
And let me guess, every single one of them was sending a huge prompt.
14,000 tokens per system prompt, streaming highly expensive reasoning tokens over and over and over again.
The postmortem on an incident like this is so predictable. I mean, the next morning, the engineering team just points the finger at that malformed JSON.
Right, they blame the formatting error.
Yeah, they write up a Jira ticket to build better input validation, they close the book, and call it a day.
But the source material we're looking at today argues that is entirely the wrong takeaway. The malformed JSON wasn't the root cause at all.
Not even close.
The root cause was a vacuum. I mean, there was no governance, no kill switch, no policy for evicting old memory, and honestly, no theory of what that specific AI workflow was supposed to be earning the business in the first place to justify its existence.
Yeah, the data error was just the trigger. The vacuum of strategy was the actual disease.
And curing that disease is our mission for this deep dive. Today, we are unpacking the Token Economy White Paper. It is essentially a first principles playbook for governing enterprise AI, specifically frontier models like Claude, in a live production environment.
Which is so needed right now.
It really is. The goal here is to show you how to move from playing defense, you know, constantly trying to explain last quarter's massive invoice, to confidently committing to next quarter's budget.
Because the hard truth is, production inference cost isn't governed by the discount you negotiated with your cloud provider.
Right.
It's governed entirely by your organization's token discipline.
So I want to start with how we visualize the model itself. Let's look at a model like Claude, which boasts this massive 200,000 token context window.
It's huge.
Yeah. And right now, engineers tend to treat that window like like a digital junk door. They just sweep the user's entire chat history, all the tool descriptions, 5 different policy documents, and whatever else they have into that window, slam it shut, and just hope the model figures it out.
Which is a terrible strategy.
Exactly. The white paper argues we have to treat that context window like a ruthless corporate balance sheet. I love this analogy. Every single token is either an earning asset, a liability, or a direct expense.
And that shift in mindset really changes everything. Because a token isn't just a free piece of storage. Every word, every character you put into that context window carries a compounding cost.
Right, because of how the AI pays attention.
Yes, in a transformer model, attention is dense. The model has to read and process every token against every other token on every single generation.
So all that extra junk you put in there.
Yeah, it actively competes with the important instructions for the model's attention. The AI doesn't magically know which tokens are the load-bearing rules and which are just, you know, filler. It has to infer that based on position and relevance.
So when you fill the window with unearning material, you're basically punishing yourself twice. The bill goes up because you're processing more data, and the output quality actually drops because the model gets distracted.
Exactly. And that drop in quality is the hidden tax that doesn't show up on a financial dashboard until a customer complains. And this dynamic ties directly into a concept called extended thinking.
Right, the reasoning token.
Yeah. This is the model's ability to essentially spend internal reasoning tokens thinking out loud in the background, basically before it gives you a final answer.
Which is funny because I see cost-conscious engineering teams immediately turn that feature off. They look at the dashboard, see the reasoning tokens costing money, and just clip the switch to save a buck.
Which is often a massive false economy. Well, you have to look at the whole system. The mechanical trade here is very direct. You are spending tokens you pay for in exchange for accuracy you also pay for, just somewhere else.
Give me an example of that.
Okay, let's say you turn off extended thinking for a complex contract analysis. The model gives a slightly flawed answer because it couldn't think it through. Now, a human reviewer has to step in, read the contract, and fix the AI's mistake.
Ah, I see.
Those extra reasoning tokens the AI wanted to use were almost certainly fractions of a cent. The human reviewer's fully loaded hourly rate is vastly more expensive.
So it really depends on the specific job. I mean, if you're doing complex legal reasoning or deep financial analysis, you leave the thinking on. If the AI is just categorizing support tickets into simple buckets, you turn it off.
Precisely. And the white paper makes this very concrete with 5 specific tests to determine if a workload actually justifies running on a massive, expensive frontier tier setup.
Like what kind of tests?
Well, for instance, is the output quality literally the product you're selling? Or does the AI's extended thinking actively replace higher-cost human review? Can the information genuinely not be broken down into smaller, cheaper chunks? If your workload fails these tests, you are simply overpaying for power you don't need.
Which brings us back to that terrifying $312,000 bill at midnight. If the root cause of that disaster wasn't a coding error, but a total failure of planning, how do we actually fix the planning phase?
We have to move away from the technical mechanics for a moment and look at the bureaucratic artifact that reins them in. The paper calls it the token strategy charter.
Okay, the token strategy charter. So this is a 1-to-3-page document that must be signed before a single line of code is ever written, right?
That's the crucial part, before the code is written.
It forces the team to outline the purpose of the AI workflow, the kill criteria, and 3 very specific traffic scenarios: expected, stretch, and runaway.
And the signature requirements are what actually give it teeth. You need the business owner who holds the budget, you need the platform team lead, you need the finance partner, and especially if you're in a regulated industry, you need the risk officer.
I can literally hear engineers groaning at this right now. You know, I'm trying to build agile software here, and you want an executive and a risk officer to sign off on an API call. It sounds like pouring molasses on a fast-moving tech team.
It definitely feels like friction until you hit the wall. Think back to our opening scene. The runaway scenario defined in this charter isn't just some vague worst-case thought experiment.
Right. It's highly specific.
Exactly.
Okay.
It is a specifically named mathematical threshold tied to an automated kill switch. If that fintech company had forced their team to write a charter, the finance officer would have mandated a runaway threshold.
Like a circuit breaker in the stock market.
Precisely. A circuit breaker that trips if spend exceeds, say, 5 times the normal daily rate.
So when that malformed JSON triggered the infinite loop at 7.42 p.m., the breaker would have tripped immediately.
Yes. They would have absorbed a $20,000 hit, had a slightly annoying post-mortem meeting the next morning, and moved on with their lives.
Wow.
The cost of projecting that runaway scenario is 1 hour in a conference room. The cost of skipping it is unbounded. The charter is quite literally the cheapest insurance policy an enterprise can buy.
Okay, so let's say we have our charter, the budget is set, the guardrails are up. How do the engineers actually build the system to stay within that envelope? The text outlines a few core disciplines, starting with lever 1, how we select our models.
Yeah, the instinct in the industry is to look at a model family. Let's use Claude's Haiku, Sonnet, and Opus as the example, and just see a simple quality ladder. Good, better, best.
Right, you just pick the smartest one you can afford.
But treating them that way leads to massive overspending. They're distinct economic instruments designed for entirely different jobs.
Okay, so Haiku is the distilled model. It's incredibly fast, very cheap, and perfect for simple structured tasks like routing a conversation. Sonnet is the workhorse, which honestly overperforms for what most corporate tasks require. And Opus is the heavy, expensive frontier model, reserved for deep novel reasoning where someone's job might be on the line. But knowing this, a lot of teams try to game the system using what the author calls the cascade.
Ah, the cascade. It is a fascinating myth.
Boy, a myth. It sounds so smart.
Well, the orthodox advice you hear everywhere is, you know, route your prompt through cheap Haiku first. If Haiku isn't confident, escalate it to Sonnet. If Sonnet fails, escalate to Opus.
Yeah, it sounds elegant. You're catching all the easy queries for pennies.
On paper, it looks brilliant. But it's math, not theology. Let's say Haiku costs $1 per million dollar tokens and Sonnet costs $3. A simple cascade looks like it averages out to maybe less than a cent per query, whereas just using Sonnet flat out is slightly more expensive.
But that assumes the escalation logic works perfectly every single time.
Which it never does in the real world. If your escalation rate climbs, say 60% of queries get pushed up to Sonnet anyway, and you have even an 8% misroute rate, the whole model just falls apart.
What happens with a misroute?
A misroute means Haiku thought it answered correctly, but it actually failed. So the users are confused, and the entire process has to start over from scratch. When you factor in the latency of multiple calls and the cost of rework, the cascade often costs the same or even more than if you had just used Sonnet from the very beginning.
So model selection dictates your unit price, but what about the volume? The actual quantity of tokens you're burning to get a task done? That introduces Lever 2 workflow architecture and a concept called the orchestration multiplier, or OM.
This is where we see the most bloated architectures by far. The orchestration multiplier is the ratio of total tokens consumed for a single user action compared to what one clean, well-prompted model call would have used.
Okay, so a single simple call has an OM of 1.0.
Exactly.
But the text says the average enterprise deployment has an OM of 4 to 6. Why is it so incredibly high?
Because teams fall in love with multi-agent workflows. They build a supervisor agent that talks to a research agent that reports back to a drafting agent.
It feels very sci-fi and sophisticated.
It does. But every time those agents talk to each other, they are sending massive system prompts back and forth. You are multiplying your token spend by 5x for what is often just expensive ceremony. The author argues the target OM should be closer to 1.5 or 2.
Meaning keep it simple.
Yes. Most of what teams try to do with complex agent swarms could be handled by a single model call equipped with a good search tool.
And that bloat is probably why everyone is so obsessed with prompt caching right now. I mean, the promise is that if you have a massive set of instructions, you cache it, and suddenly your costs drop dramatically. But the white paper warns about something called the cache cliff.
Yeah, caching is highly misunderstood right now. Yes, it reduces the read costs of those saved tokens by about 90%, but to put those tokens into the cache in the first place, providers charge you a 25% premium on the write cost.
Wait, really? So meaning if I don't reuse that cached prompt enough times before the system clears it out?
You're actually losing money. Exactly. The break-even point is about 3 to 5 sustained queries per second. If you don't have that volume, caching is net negative. And roughly a third of enterprise deployments fall into an even worse trap, which is the cache timestamp anti-pattern.
Okay, this one blew my mind when I read it. Explain how this happens.
Imagine an engineer writes a prompt that includes the current time down to the second, or a unique user ID right at the top of the instructions.
Okay.
Because that timestamp changes on every single API call, the cache sees it as a brand new prompt every time. It invalidates the old cache and writes a new one.
So they are paying a 25% penalty to write data to a cache that is literally never read over and over again.
It's pure financial waste. And it usually pairs with another massive leak, the eternal conversation anti-pattern.
Which is what?
This happens when teams don't build an eviction policy.
Yeah.
They just let a user chat with a bot, and they keep feeding the entire conversation history back to the model on every single turn.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah, by turn 10, you might be carrying 80,000 tokens of stale greetings and irrelevant tangents. You're multiplying your costs by 8, and honestly, confusing the model in the process.
Okay, so we've cleaned up our models, we've stopped our agents from looping, and we aren't caching timestamps. But what about the raw data we are feeding into this system? This is Lever 3. If I dump a 100-page dense PDF into the context window, does any of this architectural math even matter?
It matters immensely, which brings us to how we handle data before the model ever even sees it.
Well,
the fundamental rule here is a token filtered upstream at ingestion is paid for once. A token filtered in context by the AI model is paid for every single time that workload runs.
Let's visualize this for the listener. Say you have a system that pulls 8 paragraphs of text from your company database to answer a user's question. If you haven't cleaned your data, about 40% of the words in those paragraphs are what the paper calls passenger tokens.
Right. Dead weight.
Yeah. It's boilerplate text, copyright footers, navigation menus from scraped websites, stuff that is just along for the ride.
And if you run 5,000 queries a day, passing that garbage into the model costs you 1.9 billion wasted tokens over a year. The model has to read and process those copyright footers millions of times.
And it degrades the AI's attention, like we talked about earlier. But fixing it requires actual engineering effort.
Yes, but it's a one-time project. Writing a script to strip out boilerplate at ingestion eliminates that passenger volume permanently. The cost of that engineering time usually pays for itself in token savings within a single quarter.
That makes total sense.
It also shifts how we look at the reasoning retrieval frontier.
Right. This is the balance between giving the AI documents to read versus just letting it use its own built-in knowledge, what they call parametric memory.
Yes. Parametric memory is the knowledge baked into the model's brain during its training. Sometimes, instead of paying the database costs to retrieve a document and paying the token costs to have the AI read it, it is actually cheaper and faster to just let the model think through the problem using what it already knows.
But knowing when to rely on the model's brain versus external data requires humans who truly understand how to talk to these systems. Which leads us to lever 4, prompt literacy. The text maps out a prompt literacy ladder from level 1 consumers who just type basic requests to level 5 architects.
It's a great framework.
I want to look at a fascinating investment dilemma presented here. Let's say I'm an executive and my company's AI tools are giving bad answers. My instinct is to go hire a highly specialized prompt engineer for $200,000 a year to fix it. But the tech says I absolutely shouldn't do that.
The math strongly argues against it. If you spend that $200,000 to hire one elite engineer, they will optimize a handful of core backend systems. But if you spend the same budget to train 500 everyday business users, moving them from level 1 to level 2 literacy...
The ROI is massive.
Exactly.
Because level 1 is just typing, summarize this report. Level 2 is understanding how to define a role, give constraints, and ask for a specific output format.
Yeah, when you elevate 500 users, you are optimizing hundreds of thousands of daily interactions. Without that baseline literacy, organizations fall into the unbounded system prompt anti-pattern.
I've definitely written a few of those.
We all have. People just keep adding rules to a prompt. You know, don't do this, always do that, until the prompt is 15,000 words long and literally nobody knows what half of it does.
Which is why the concept of prompt as code is critical. You can't just have prompts living in a Word document on someone's desktop. They need to be stored, version controlled, and tested exactly like traditional software. If a prompt change breaks a workflow, you need to be able to roll it back instantly.
Because the prompt is the software now.
Exactly. Okay, so we've optimized the model, we've cleaned the data, we've controlled the prompts, but none of this answers the most important question. What is this highly optimized machine actually allowed to decide out in the real world?
And this is the final piece of the puzzle, the fifth lever, human judgment. We have this mathematical formula in the text for deciding when a human needs to stay in the loop.
Right, small p times v must be greater than CR plus LR.
I know, algebra on a deep dive is always risky, but this formula is the bedrock of AI risk management. Let's ground it. Imagine your AI is evaluating small business loans of $50,000.
Okay.
P is the probability that AI makes a mistake, say 10%. V is the financial value of that mistake, which is $50,000. So your risk exposure per loan is $5,000.
Got it. That's the left side of the equation. Risk exposure is $5,000.
Right. Now, compare that $5,000 risk to the right side of the equation, the cost of a human reviewer, that's CR, plus the cost of the latency delay, LR. If paying a loan officer takes $50 in hourly wages and the delay costs you nothing in lost business, then $5,000 is vastly greater than $50.
So the human absolutely earns their keep. Keep them in the loop.
Exactly.
And what's brilliant is that the probability of error, that small p, isn't static. If you do the data pre-work we just talked about and you optimize your prompts, the AI gets smarter. Mm-hmm. The probability of error drops, which means investing in engineering upstream directly reduces your need for expensive human reviewers downstream.
That is the compounding return of token discipline. But we can't just rely on math. The charter has to define 3 hard ethical lines for human judgment.
What are they?
First, any adverse decision affecting an individual, like denying a loan or rejecting medical coverage, must have an accountable human reviewer. Second, aggregate decisions over large populations, like shifting prices dynamically, can be fully automated.
And the third?
Trust erosion decisions, like using a highly realistic voice bot. Those sit in the middle. You need clear policy so users don't feel deceived.
Managing all of this complexity sounds like a full-time job. And the white paper agrees, introducing a new staff-level role, the token architect.
A vital new role.
Yeah, this person owns the model bill of materials, or MBO. They map out every single AI workflow in the company, what tier of model it uses, what its multiplier is, and where the humans are in the loop.
And they run the quarterly charter reviews. Because without that constant pruning, these systems naturally decay. prompts bloat, caches miss, and costs creep up. The token architect is the defense against that decay.
This all builds to a pretty stunning prediction at the end of the text about where this industry will be by 2028. It's not just about managing costs anymore, it's about legal survival.
Yes. By 2028, the author predicts that major regulatory frameworks, particularly in finance and healthcare, will mandate a concept called context lineage.
Context lineage.
Yeah. It will no longer be acceptable to tell a regulator, the AI evaluated the file and denied the claim. You will be legally required to reconstruct and prove exactly which specific tokens were sitting in that AI's context window at the exact millisecond it generated the denial.
That is wild to visualize. Think about our journey today. We started by realizing we have to treat the AI context window like a corporate balance sheet, not a bottomless junk drawer. We learned how to avoid multi-agent workflows that multiply costs for no reason.
Right.
We discussed filtering our data upstream so we aren't paying to read copyright footers a million times a day. And it all anchors on the token strategy charter, a document that forces the business strategy to guide the engineering rather than letting the code dictate your financial risk.
It is the ultimate shift from reacting to surprises to engineering with intent.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you to ponder. If proving exactly what an AI knew at any given millisecond becomes a strict legal requirement in a few years, will the next massive corporate industry be context auditing?
Oh, absolutely.
Just as we have massive accounting firms like Deloitte or PwC validating financial ledgers today, imagine tomorrow's most powerful firms. They might just be teams of auditors and technologists forensically reconstructing the 80,000 token memories of AI agents to defend corporate decisions in a federal courtroom. Are you building your AI systems today with enough discipline to survive the audits of tomorrow? Or are you just waiting for the next malformed JSON to trigger an alert at 11.47 p.m., dragging you back into the dark, expensive waters of a system you don't control?